When you walk through an art museum, what happens?
You see some interesting things, you see some not so interesting things, and if you're like us at all, you're probably a little bit sleepy.
Well, grab a cafecito and listen up. It's Art Slice, a palatable serving of art history. We are both artists, so we look at art history through that perspective. We cover the artists you know and those that have been ignored for so many different reasons.
We look at the context of the time, we compare it to today.
We don't dumb anything down, but, and this is a big but,
hey-o,
we like to have a good time, okay? Nos gusta to goof around, all right? We have hungry pantry moms might startle you. It's a long story.
We feed them art materials. Art is just a visual language that is open for anyone to interpret.
So if this all sounds good to you, join us on Art Slice, a palatable serving of art history.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
The reason that I wanted to incorporate those elements into it was I was going to have kids 12 years ago. I was getting ready for that change of life. And I thought, I need a way to connect with my children so that I can still stay on my artistic mission, but I can kind of bring them into it. I can bring kids out on adventures with me. I can have some adventures myself. Maybe I'll grow as a person, maybe be prepared to be a better dad, learn practical skills, and then put some of those practical skills into the book so I can pass it down to my kids. I can pass it down to other people's kids. And the more I worked on the book, the more reality made it in there. And then by the time the book came out, monarchs were struggling in a way that they weren't even 10 years ago when I started developing ideas for the book. And so it became one of my goals to give back to the monarchs, I guess, in some way, because I felt like they'd given me so much. They'd given me a mission and a curiosity to follow. And they're fascinating, and they touch a lot of different points of the natural world and science and things that are just good talking points, I guess. So they're an easy way to engage people's fascination, because they are just really fascinating creatures. And so, yeah, I guess it's part and parcel of my ideas around the book to invite other people into, well, what does it mean to get fascinated about the natural world, and what can you find out there? What's similar and what's different from how I've recorded it in the book? Excuse me. What's similar and what's different versus how I've recorded the places with illustrations and kind of transformed them in certain ways. If you were to go to the Oregon coast yourself, you can go and track the character's progress step by step, and you'll see those mountain ranges and the coastal vistas, but they might be a little bit different. So it's just kind of an invitation in all different ways to kids and families.
Yeah, yeah. And we're talking to Jonathan Case, and Jonathan Case talking about Little Monarchs. Jonathan's an Eisner Award-winning cartoonist, and I love a lot of the work that he's done, including Dear Creature, The New Deal, which I got a nice limited print from, have that framed, Batman 66, and Over the Garden Wall. And followed your work, like I mentioned, for a while, Jonathan. I really love digging into the point of just talking about the story and talking about the science within it, and mentioning what excited me about the book Little Monarchs was, for me, as having a curiosity and not knowing much about the topic and some of the science behind behind the monarchs, but the details of place with the compass, the feel and the look of a book that is to be used in the field and to be active and to be connected to nature. So I heard you use the word invitation. I also felt that within the book with regards to the places that you visit and the curiosity or family curiosity and adventure that could go into it in a very tough environment and with the effects of, you know, climate change. So there's so much, in your work. But I wanted to ask you, Jonathan, about the story and about creating the book and talking about the monarch as a driver of what you're trying to do in your work.
Do you want, well, I guess saying it again, a different way, maybe I really just want to communicate with people. I want to communicate with people in my work and invite them into new experiences. I guess that's why any of us writes or draws, we're trying to communicate and create something that wasn't quite there before. Even if it's a part of some history, you know, or a tradition. And with Little Monarchs, I had spent plenty of time in my career leading up to that point when I was getting ready to do the book, thinking about other people's work and thinking about other people's stories and how could I take this from that thing that I love and this from another thing that I love. And when it came time to start Little Monarchs and it came time to start thinking about myself as what kind of a parent would I be, I guess the outdoors called to me and the idea of having some of my own adventures called to me. And I guess putting experience first rather than drawing from other people's stories so much. So,
yeah.
And with that, that experience first kind of creative process, that's also what I want for the end result is for parents, kids, families to be invited into the reality that's sort of referenced in the book, hopefully referenced thoroughly, you know, and in a way that just stirs imagination. I didn't want to do a book that was just educational. I wanted to do a book that was about characters, and those characters can kind of become like imaginary friends. They were that for me when I was out in those real places, thinking, okay, what would they be doing at this part of the country? And then, you know, you can follow them too as a reader. You can follow them into those real places and use them as guides, sort of.
One of the things I noticed, Jonathan, in the book was something that I learned in reading about the monarchs was the nature of travel and generations and change. And so in learning about that type of migration, which I had never heard of like multi-generational, it's just not a knowledge that I had, it made me think about time so differently. And to think about that undercurrent of thinking of the slow travel and slow movement. And I was wondering if that was kind of a big underpinning for you as far as the perspective of looking at that time can move like that or that not things aren't immediate like we think a lot nowadays.
Well, I think about generational memory, I guess. Maybe that gets to your point a little bit. The idea that we have inherited more than maybe we give credit to our ancestors, you know, like in the same way that they say your health as a grown adult is sort of related to what your grandmother ate, you know, her nutrition. I think maybe experiences, good and bad, sins of the fathers, all of that probably plays a much greater role in our natures and in the people that we that we are. And it's not just like these basic biological building blocks. I think it is related to something more close to our spirits, you know, our experiences that are passed down almost, you know, because if you think about how the monarchs work, it takes them those four generations to complete the migration. And by the time you're at generation four, those are thousands of miles from where their ancestors started, but somehow they know how to go back to this little grove, maybe on the coast of California, and no mother or father monarch says, "Oh yeah, just go this way, turn right at the stop sign."
Right.
They just have that knowledge in them at a genetic level, I guess. And it's pretty amazing. It's something that I didn't put into the book, but I've only heard later, and I'm not sure the source on this, but I've heard that there used to be a mountain in the middle of Lake Michigan. And when the monarchs, the Eastern monarchs, are flying across Lake Michigan, they go around that mountaintop. They're avoiding the, you know, going around the mountain that's no longer even there. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
What a marvelous thought in reality. Wow. That's just absolutely incredible to think about.
Yeah.
Part of that wonder, and thank you so much for talking about that. Like I said, folks, in reading Jonathan's book, it's very inviting and engaging, and visually in the stimulating thoughts, you'll find yourself kind of caught up in the story and in the monarchs. I wanted to ask you something talking more generally about art, Jonathan. I was really interested in, you had mentioned about, you know, the influence of, you know, having a family and your children in trying to capture a place and experience. I think a lot of times artists can struggle with, you know, the solitary nature at times of that art is thought to be within, and also more of a community, more of a value within the family. Was it easier for you to make that conscious choice to kind of be like, well, I'm going to have a family and then I'm going to integrate, you know, my art and try to adapt within that, not leave it behind, but have it be lived, you know, for you and yours?
I think it's relatively easy to make the choice, and it's probably harder to live it out in the way that you envisioned it, you know, in your own personal dreamscape. Yeah. Things can just seem really all very put together. And then when you get out there, you realize, oh, I've got a lot more to contend with than I had bargained for. But, art can be a very solitary, even selfish, self-oriented kind of practice. So if you can build something into your art, into the process of your art, that points you back out into community, especially for your research phase or your, you know, gathering the pieces to put something together in your little castle where you have to be locked away sometimes for years. I guess it's kind of a seasonal thing. But yeah, the daily rhythm, I guess now I don't have a dedicated studio space. And part of that is just that I enjoy kind of being in the house, hearing my kids running around when they're home from school, and kind of the background noise of that keeps me company. 'Cause otherwise, making these kinds of books, I can't do that when I'm writing, but when I'm drawing, I like having that openness to what's going on. It would be pretty lonesome otherwise.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting us into kind of just the environment that influences what you create. So, Jonathan, wanted to ask one of the big questions that was interested in your answer. What is art? What do you think art is?
I think art is our attempt to commune with whatever our sense of the divine is. Honestly, I think it's a way for us to play and get lost in the ever expanding efforts of creating. You know, the creative process is going on with or without our help at all times. You know, the universe is expanding and creating more and more, seemingly at an accelerating pace that makes no sense to us, you know, with the set of tools that we have to interpret physics and all of that. But for whatever reason, we're a part of a creative process. That's the default. So art is just one way that we get to join into that, I guess, and be conscious of it in some way, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, Jonathan, have you always seen yourself as an artist? I usually dig in and kind of on the identity question. I mean, have you always seen yourself as an artist, or when you saw yourself as an artist, what changed in you? Like, why were you an artist then?
I've always known that I was or wanted to be an artist since I was little. I never really had any ideas about doing anything else. It didn't really matter too much what the expression was, whether it was drawing or acting or writing. It's all kind of the same, you know, just dedication to creative impulses. I didn't have any kind of aha moment. It's just always sort of been that way.
Yeah, it kind of felt it that way. And I really enjoyed listening to you talking about what art is. And another follow-up just connected to that. It's you know, it's about your art as well, is the question of the role of art and whether that's changed, if there are particular emergencies or crises that humans are facing now or felt to be facing now. Does the role of art change within that, or is it, you think it's kind of, it kind of just remains the same over time as far as what art is supposed to do, its role?
I think it's probably the same as it has been, in the sense that hopefully if we're calling it art with a capital A, that it shakes us out of old ways of thinking. Maybe it also provides comfort in a similar and startling way, where if we've been locked into an old way of thinking and we're just tired and worn down, I think great art can inspire new directions, and it has a restorative, healing nature to it. Even if it seems, I was watching a show recently that was pretty brutal, and I was, you know, it was an anime and very violent, and I was sort of put off by the violence, but at the same time, it made me so grateful that I don't have to live in that reality of violence in my own life. It kind of gave me some perspective for the day. I don't know that it was great art, but it definitely, it inspired a feeling in me afterwards, almost like a catharsis of gratitude that, that violence is so much of human reality. And for whatever reason, in this moment in time, I was born into this place and this time where I don't have to experience that at the level that so many people do. So I don't know. I'm getting off on a tangent there, but I think art should inspire more than just to entertain. But
yeah, well, yeah. I really like what you had to say about like having that strong of a reaction to something that, you know, was on some level off-putting, the level of the violence, but it created kind of a positive effect in your head. And I think it's just a really cool question, because if it's not art, it's doing some of the things that art is doing, is trying to do anyways, to knock you around a little bit. I mean, the way you see it might not be 100% all the time. Right. So, I wanted to ask you, I've followed your work, as I mentioned at the beginning, I remember the Green River Killer and some of the other works they've done. I really loved Batman 66 and the New Deal. I just wanted to ask you, is there a particular realm that you feel like most comfortable as far as the storytelling goes? Because I got your book and at first I was like, oh, it's Jonathan Case. And I was like, wow, this is real. What is this? And I was just really drawn in, but it made me question. I was like, what did I expect from Jonathan Case? You know? And is there something you feel that you know that you really connect to, whether it's the characters or the stories that you've done?
Well, I think maybe what you're getting at there is that I don't seem to have one way of doing things. I tend to dabble in a lot of different modes of storytelling. And I guess I just do that because it keeps it fresh for me. And as I'm going through different chapters of my life, I tend to want to explore new territory. So even in the way that I draw, I tend to draw a little bit differently with every project. And that is not a great thing in terms of being a commercial artist with a distinct brand, but it's a good thing for me as somebody who wants to just continue exploring. So I guess that's mainly what I want to do, is just explore new territory and keep pushing myself into new and hopefully enlightening directions. And you know, whatever the story is of the moment, hopefully it's doing that for me.
I wanted to ask you, podcast covers like a lot of different areas, but it's definitely a Pacific Northwest podcast. At least it feels that way to me. And I'm originally from the East Coast, but I've learned so much and kind of like have sought to absorb what I see that's like in the Pacific Northwest. And I see that a lot in your art, and particularly in Little Monarchs. I love the Oregon coast. I love the ocean, and just seeing some of the places within the book, it just felt really intimate and gave that sense of place that is really difficult for an artist to do. And I think you did it. How the heck did you do that? To bring it in. I mean, I felt I could smell the Oregon coast right there. I could feel it a bit. Like, how'd you pull that one off?
Well, a lot of that is probably just the fact that I grew up on the Oregon coast for most of my childhood. So that sense of place is just a reflection of, again, my own experiences. But with Little Monarchs, every single location in that book is a place that you could go yourself. So it has, you know, not only the references, like the visual references, but you can actually map the coordinates out and follow along the character's route step by step. And that was really important to me, because there's nothing worse than being a local and then watching a movie or reading a book and thinking, they're talking about this car going down this road, and I know that you can't go down the road that direction, you know, and I'm pulled out of the story. It's a little thing to say, like, okay, that happens as a local and you're taken out of the story. But the bigger work that can be done is if you really dive deep and you try to bring as much as you can from what's really there into the story, it multiplies the work of writing something, because you can't just choose to have a scene set in, you know, any old scenario. You're beholden to the environment, but it also provokes, the limitation can provoke its own creative solution, I guess, and its own idea that wouldn't have come to you just out of pure imagination. And having those kinds of constraints can be good as a storyteller. And just mostly I want people to feel like this is a book that does take place in a world that they either recognize or that they want to explore more themselves.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think one of the things I appreciate about you telling some of the story behind this, but even particular thinking about the images of the monarchs and the question of like, how is it that there's this record of where to go and what to do that seems of so long of time, and even recognizing, you know, objects no longer there within in the patterns, such a deeply profound and mysterious thought that, as a philosopher, shit, you know, that's like, you know, I really dig that. Okay, so Jonathan Case here, we get the big question for him. Why is there something rather than nothing? That's the big question of the show.
Well, I was just a couple of days ago listening to some scientists talk about the Big Bang and how big a bang it really was. It's some crazy idea, like everything expanding from the point of a pin to the edges of the universe in like some ridiculous fraction of a second, like to the millionth power, like just that short amount of time, and the energy of all of that, and the heat of it conjuring all these galaxies, and it's incredible. So I don't know why that happened, but as an artist, my meaning making that I do is to say I'm going to join in with that creative process. And even if I don't know the why, at least I'll be part of the dance. You know, so many people say in the face of grief, well, you'll know one day. You'll know why this happened one day. But I'm not positive that that's how it works. I think maybe in the end, you just accept that that was part of the dance.
I love that, man. You know, it's great talking here to Jonathan Case. And hey, Jonathan, before we let you go, I really want the listeners to be able to connect to the different things you create, have created, and what you got going on. I don't know if you do signings or anything along those lines, but just how do folks find your great art? I mean, honestly, your award-winning art and just the great work you do. Where did they go?
I have a website, jonathancase.net, and you can just Google Jonathan Case cartoonist and you'll find my websites, my, you know, social media accounts, and I post stuff there every once in a while. I'm taking a little bit of a break from signings this fall, just kind of staying home, and you know, kids are back in school and that kind of thing, but that's given me a chance to get back to some good work. I'm working on some stuff for DC right now for Batgirls. It's one of those bat people things. So that's going to be a fun thing to do for a couple of months. And we'll see. Next year, I'll have some more book events. I've been invited to the the Tucson Book Festival, so I'm going to go and do that and maybe a few other things. So we'll see. But yeah, Google is the way, I guess.
Google is the way. Well, you definitely, and thanks so much again, kind of for the peek in and the thinking, honestly, you know, behind the art and the things you do. I really appreciate, you know, what you create, and I encourage everybody listening, just fantastic, world, you know, kind of worlds in place that Jonathan brings in, and, just stupendous work on the recent book. I love how it feels lively and active and living and forward thinking. I just wanted to thank you for it. So thanks, Jonathan, for coming on the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast.
Thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate your thoughts and all of the kind things that you've said and the conversation. It's good.
Thanks so much, brother. You take care.
You too.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.